98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
Patrick Peterson is a good dude. He's a great dad. A friend of mine remembers how Pat P. used to take his daughter trick-or-treating through the neighborhood every Halloween in full costume, holding her hand every step of the way. But on Sunday, his homecoming to Arizona is going to get loud, and chances are it's going to get rude. Now, early in his career, Peterson burned a lot of opposing quarterbacks. Later, he burned a lot of bridges. There were trade demands and a drug suspension and ugly numbers from Pro Football Focus. He burned one of the greatest apologies in Arizona sports history with a mea culpa from the 16th hole at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. And oh yeah, he also omitted DeAndre Hopkins' name when talking about the quality wide receivers he would face this year as a member of the Vikings, which, of course, raises Sunday stakes significantly. After all, D-Hop made his case as the number one receiver in football on Sunday, whereas Peterson was smoked on a long touchdown pass to Ja'Marr Chase against the Bengals. And common sense tells you that the Cardinals might be looking to pick on Peterson a bit, looking to prove a point as well as score them against their former cornerback. And from what I can tell on social media, a lot of Cardinal fans are hoping that Peterson gets a big slice of humble pie in his Glendale homecoming. Now, the next time should be better for Peterson when he's inducted into the team's Ring of Honor, as long as he doesn't burn any more bridges like the ones Anquan Boldin once set ablaze. Today's Bickley Blast, brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at Chapman BMW in Chandler, at Chapman BMW on Camelback. Find them online at ChapmanBMW.com.
You know, Mac, I really don't know, but honestly, at this moment and at this time,
yep,
the regular game.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly.
That is Patrick Peterson on his All Things Covered podcast.
Liar!
With Bryant McFadden on returning to State Farm Stadium and Arizona. Then the follow-up question, how do you think you'll be received at the first time that stadium will be full in quite some time on Sunday?
I have no idea, Matt. I really, really don't. Like, it's going to be all new to me, you know what I mean? So I really don't know what to expect, you know. Mm-hmm. So for the most part, I'm treating this like a regular game, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Too high, I don't want to get too low. I want to treat this literally.
No question. Don't get too high. Exactly. Don't get too high, because sometimes when you get too high, it kind of takes the focus off the what you need to do. So,
like a regular game, have a great week of preparation. Go to Arizona just like we was going to Cincinnati.
All right. And I think that's the right attitude to have, at least verbally. But, I mean, the actions and the social media posts and the constant barrage of attention paid to Arizona, mm-hmm. and what's been happening since he left, kind of indicates that, you know, it's impossible to treat this as a regular game. You can't, in my opinion, you can't have it both ways. If he had ignored everything and just focused on Minnesota Vikings from the time that he left, but, you know, taking shots at the front office, mm-hmm. and talking about how he was treated on his way out, to getting involved with whether or not anybody was going to wear his number 21 again, and seemingly beaming over the fact that Malcolm Butler retired, yes, before he got to wear that number.
Exactly.
You can't have it both ways.
The fact that he kept insisting twice that he couldn't wait to face Julio Jones and A.J. Brown, who the Vikings do not play this year, whom, yes, the Cardinals just played. Which led a lot of people to
suggest. Maybe he's talking about in the Super Bowl.
Right. Maybe, yeah. Or maybe he's just been absolutely obsessed with Arizona. But I will tell you this. My buddy, who used to see him trick-or-treating all the time, he's uprooted. He sold that house. Mm-hmm. So he no longer has property in Arizona. Well, so that was a
buddy,
full break.
Where did he move?
No, not my buddy, Patrick Peterson. It's yeah. So to me, this is going to be interesting, because there's a lot of ill will on social media that might just be typical, you know, hate bait that's out there on social media, or it might be real, or Patrick Peterson might have really kind of rubbed Cardinals fans wrong once too often.
Yeah, and I think that coupled with diminished play certainly had something to do with it. You know, you were talking about Pro Football Focus grades. His year grade last year was 55.2.
Mm-hmm.
That ranked 83rd out of 121 cornerbacks ranked. That was his lowest total since his rookie season, when he did struggle as a corner. He was brilliant as a punt returner as a rookie, but that was his lowest grade by far,
yeah,
since then. And he was, you know, he was average in week one with Minnesota. Patrick Peterson said earlier this offseason in some capacity, hey, and I think it was on his podcast, the only times I'm going back to Arizona in the future is if we play the Cardinals or when I'm going into the Ring of Honor. That's what he said.
That's right.
And Cardinal fans, just like a lot of fan bases, they've got pretty strong and long memories.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the way you put it. Early in his career, he burned a lot of opposing quarterbacks. Late in his career, he burned a lot of bridges.
Well, let me phrase it this way. Does he deserve to be cheered or booed from Cardinals fans?
I would say both.
You can't necessarily assign one of the... It depends on the individual. I think you're going to hear a mix of both. I think Patrick Peterson left Arizona in not a completely gracious way. Mm-hmm. Not the first athlete to do that. There's still a lot of Cardinal fans that are Patrick Peterson fans.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that, you know, got tired of, you know, it got to be a little bit tiresome after a while.
Yeah.
The Patrick Peterson, you know, repeated questions about his happiness, about his play, the drug suspension, the trade request,
mm-hmm.
the somewhat passive-aggressive comments over the years. So
yep.
I think it's going to be absolutely mixed.
And some polite applause, too. Like, I don't really care about you, but welcome back.
Right.
Here you go.
So to me, yeah, I think both are, I think Vinny's right, not to sit on the fence here, but I think he's right in this answer. It all depends on how you feel and how you remember Patrick Peterson, because quite honestly, I think he deserves both. The question I have is, Patrick Peterson has spoken extensively about how he fully expects to be in the Ring of Honor. So he expects there's going to be a celebration for him one day in Glendale. Is that true? Because Anquan Boldin should be up in that Ring of Honor. Anquan Boldin meant as much to the Cardinals as Patrick Peterson has. And Anquan Boldin, like Patrick Peterson, got sideways on the way out. Now, Anquan was also the kind of guy that there's no second chances with Anquan Boldin.
No. And look, you know how I feel about Anquan Boldin. He's arguably my favorite Arizona Cardinal mm-hmm. player of all time. But I think if you're going to compare resumes, Patrick Peterson's Arizona resume is even stronger than Anquan Boldin's.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a three-time All-Pro. He made 8 Pro Bowls in a Cardinal uniform. He was part of the All-2010s Decade team.
Right.
That's lofty stuff. I think Patrick Peterson, some people might scoff at it, I think Patrick Peterson is right to feel that one day he will be a Ring of Honor member. I think it would be criminal if he wasn't, considering everything. Now, it depends. A lot of it depends on the personal relationship between the player and the mm-hmm. organization and the individuals in the organization. So I think that's probably more patchable at this point than the Anquan Boldin situation was.
I think so, too, but also consider this. Consider the fact that as a captain, Patrick Peterson really made life difficult for two brand new first-year head coaches in succession.
Mm-hmm.
He did it to Steve Wilks, and he did it to Cliff Kingsbury. And if you're part of that organization, you might look at that a little differently. You might look at that going, man, you really hosed us on that one. I don't know. This is going to be fascinating because I'm curious to see what Patrick Peterson and a slimmed down Pat P, how he handles DeAndre Hopkins.
Well, here he is on matching up against Hopkins.
D-Hop is a very, very talented receiver. He obviously don't drop many balls at all.
No.
He's going to catch it. You know, a great, great 50-50 ball type guy. You know, if the ball's in the air with the 50-50 opportunities, it's a good chance that he's going to come down with it. Sometimes when you have a guy like that, you just have to be on your P's and Q's for 60 minutes because, you know what I mean? At any given time, anything can happen.
Look, Cliff Kingsbury, Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, they know what Patrick Peterson, you know, what output he put out there last year. They know mm-hmm. what he's capable of doing. I would expect him to be targeted quite a bit by that combo Sunday.
Right. Yeah.
By the way, Brandon Yost was our caller number 7. Brandon is going to the Cardinals-Vikings season opener on Sunday, the return of the Red Sea.
Nice.
Listen for your name coming up at 1:35. Wolf and Luke will call out a name, and you got another chance to win as we continue to send people to that home opener. You can text your thoughts also to the FanDuel text line. It's open 620-620 right now. Coming up next, there's been a quarterback controversy brewing in Chicago, and it continues. And it's getting thicker after week one. We'll get into that and more next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta. Hash marks.
Yeah, we knew there was a couple quarterback controversies in the NFL going into week one. One head coach who stuck by his guns was Matt Nagy of the Chicago Bears and said, you know, they said it on social media. They said it in press conferences. Andy Dalton is our QB1. Justin Fields, you know, we might work him in, have a package for him here or there. But he's not ready to start. And we saw in week one, the Chicago Bears offense led mostly by Andy Dalton, 14 points, although interestingly enough, Justin Fields scored the other touchdown. Mm-hmm. So they have each engineered the same number of scoring drives. But the, for lack of a better phrase, Bick, the natives in Chicago are getting restless.
Oh,
they see the future at the quarterback position. They've been starved for a good one through most of their franchise's existence, and Andy Dalton ain't it.
No. So I think that there's a lot of stuff flying in Chicago because you're getting what you're starting to hear now, as you're pointing out, there's a lot of voices now calling for Justin Fields, and it's not just Bears fans. It's more than that. Marquise Goodwin just ripped the Bears offense. There's a lot of people now taking shots at Matt Nagy's offense, and for those who watch the Bears play, there's a lot of dinking and dunking. And so the question becomes, is this a Matt Nagy issue, or is this an offense that they're running because Andy Dalton's the quarterback?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is antiquated stuff that they're trying to do here.
Yeah, he completed 27 passes for just over 200 yards.
Yeah, and I think they've got the lowest downfield attempts. Pass attempts more than 10 yards, I think they are practically off the map. So to me, this is a tough thing. Because a head coach, you're feeling the pressure to make this change, and yet once you make the change, you played your last card, and once you've made the change, you've got to live with what Justin Fields does not know. And I think I said this on Monday. If I didn't, I'll say it now. A buddy of mine in Chicago said the issue with Justin Fields is, as good as he looks, if he comes to the line of scrimmage and the defense changes up the look, he cannot call into another play. He cannot check into a different play because he's not there yet as a quarterback. So that's problematic. So if you give the job to Justin Fields right now, he's going to have to run the play you give him, no matter what the defense does pre-snap.
Yeah, well, the noise is getting louder from a national standpoint of for Matt Nagy to make the switch and start Justin Fields over Andy Dalton. Ryan Clark from ESPN.
So based on what you saw, if you're Matt Nagy, what's it going to take for you to say, I'm going to have to go with Justin? This conversation's not going anywhere.
Well, first off, I couldn't be Matt Nagy, because if I was Matt Nagy, Justin Fields would have started this game against the Los Angeles Rams. So I can't even put myself in his position, because I wouldn't be in the position that he's in. But when you look at what Justin Fields can bring, I was excited when I saw him come in the red zone. I was like, oh, they have a package for him. They're going to use him on more than just one play. And then as the game progressed, I was like, wait, hold up. This is not it.
Yeah.
It was head scratching, like Dan scratching his head, and he ain't got dandruff. You know, and so like that's the thing you start to wonder. Okay, Chicago Bears, you move up, you draft this great talent. Matt Nagy, you understand you're coaching for your job. Why wouldn't you use a guy that you can be more diverse in your play calling, that gives you an opportunity to get some special plays that Andy Dalton does not? And so I'm confused. To me, you go in the meeting tomorrow, you say, you know what, guys, I made a mistake. Justin Fields is my starter this week.
Yeah, it would be a complete about-face with everything they've done publicly. Criticism from ESPN personnel. This is from Jeff Saturday.
Straight trash. I like Andy Dalton. He is a good quarterback. That being said, what you got against the Rams is what he is, right? They threw 38 passes. He had a little over 200 yards and an interception. If you can honestly look me in the eye in my locker room and go, he gives you, Jeff Saturday, the best chance to win and keep your job, because we are playing for our livelihoods. I'm not playing for the organization to be developed. I'm playing for wins now, because the NFL stands for not for long. Well, guess what? You're shortening everybody's opportunity to be successful, because the best 11 are on the field.
Yeah, I wonder if part of it was just the fact that they were playing the Rams in week one. Mm-hmm. It could have been a lot of jitters. I mean, you have one of the most violent, dominant defensive players on the other side of the ball in Aaron Donald, who did sack Andy Dalton once. Maybe it was just an opportunity to protect your investment. Maybe he is that stubborn. But the Bears' longest pass play in that game, Bick, was 19 yards out of 40 attempts total, because Justin Fields did throw two passes, but his long pass was 19 yards. Yeah, most of them were 10 yards or less.
It's that small rectangle that drives fans crazy. We live
we don't know what that's about. What are you talking about?
We've lived through that, man. We've lived through that. So so to me now, if you've got players squawking about the offense, that's a shot at the head coach. And if you've got players now thinking to them and really believing that Justin Fields should be their quarterback, Matt Nagy's in a tough spot. He's in a real tough spot, because you've got to honor the locker room. You can't start a guy in a football game that gives you less of a chance to win.
Well, he's in a tough spot, too, from some organizational choices.
Mm-hmm.
That was a team, whether you thought they were worthy or not, the Chicago Bears were in the playoffs last year with Mitchell Trubisky at quarterback.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They decided to move on from him. They decided to make a push for their future quarterback. So, yeah, he's responsible, but the front office led by Ryan Pace is also responsible. Mm-hmm. And you're in Chicago. You're in a tough spot anyway. Those fans are not very patient, nor should they be.
Yeah. No, not at all. And for those who don't know what Marquise Goodwin said, he was speaking of Jalen Ramsey. He was asked about Jalen Ramsey, and his quote was, quote, "He's a unique player, all pro, pro bowler, instinctive, especially in short spaces. And us not running past 10 yards, that fell right into his hands, I feel like." You can parse that with semantics, but either way, that's a player who is questioning the head coach's system.
He went on to say, too, "It's challenging, but you just got to work with what you're getting. I don't control the plays that are called. I don't control anything but just going out there and doing my job, and I do it the best that I know how, fast."
So Matt Nagy, whose job is already on the line here, you got a tough decision to make. Or not. Or maybe it's not a tough decision.
Yeah, but, I mean, also if you're thinking, and it's impossible to know everything that the head coach is thinking, but mm-hmm. if you're solely in control of that decision, which we're assuming he's got a lot of power there, you have to have at least somewhat of a look to your future. And when mm-hmm. you make a move like that, even though you're in Chicago, even though you're a playoff team, if you make a move to a younger quarterback, you're probably buying yourself a little bit more time, at least in some people's eyes.
Yeah, that's yes. And if you don't make the move, you lose the team, and then you're going to lose your job regardless, especially if that is the way this thing is going. Then it comes down to the fact, was Andy Dalton made promises? And is that complicating the issue there as well?
Who cares?
Well, I agree.
Well, if you made promises to Andy Dalton that go beyond week one, that's dumb.
That is dumb. You're right. That's exactly right.
Text Red Sea right now to 620-620 and listen for your name today at 1:35 and 3:35. You could win a pair of tickets to the Cardinals home opener this Sunday, plus one grand prize winner is going to score an autographed Kyler Murray jersey, courtesy of Pristine Auction. Once again, that's Red Sea to 620-620. Speaking of Kyler Murray, he didn't win the Offensive Player of the Week award. Good week for the offense, great week for the Cardinals defense, which has also got some people talking as well. We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Well, you know, I know what we're capable of, and obviously Chandler's been an elite pass rusher for a long time now. So nothing he does really surprises me. I guess I was a little bit caught off guard by how quickly, you know, he got it rolling. But, you know, that's what we really expect from him. And, you know, I think we're just kind of scratching the surface of what we can be as a unit. I think what we saw this past weekend was just Chandler Jones really having an outstanding performance. But, you know, as the other guys continue to come along, I think you'll see that, you know, even increase.
It's Corey Peters of the Arizona Cardinals, who made an impact in Sunday's season opening win over the Tennessee Titans, recovering the first fumble forced by Chandler Jones. And, yeah, there was more than one. Led to a Cardinal touchdown, which was a touchdown pass from Kyler Murray to DeAndre Hopkins. And talking about this defense, I didn't expect to be talking so much about the defensive performance of the Cardinals after week one, because going into that game, And I'm not saying I was wrong or we were wrong, Bick, but we had questions at all three levels of the Cardinal defense. On the defensive line, what does J.J. Watt look like? Because he didn't participate a lot in the preseason. Corey Peters coming back, didn't participate. What's the pass rush and the rotation going to look like?
Jordan Phillips
being out again, at least for the first 3 weeks, at the linebacker spot. You're starting a rookie in Zaven Collins. What does Isaiah Simmons' role look like? How engaged is Jordan Hicks? And then in the secondary, when at least at one point of the preseason, Malcolm Butler was projected as your number one cornerback.
Oh, without a doubt.
And he retires before you get started. What was that secondary going to look like, especially since they didn't really address it with veteran talent, although Antonio Hamilton did dress for that game? It was 1 week, but they resoundingly and loudly answered all of those questions against Tennessee.
Yeah, without a doubt. I was even worried about even deeper issues because in trying to piece together some of the weirdness of the offseason and of training camp in which we didn't have quite full clarity about any of these situations, such as the Jordan Hicks thing, how he still feels about the Cardinals, how the locker room feels about how he was treated, especially now that Jordan Hicks is back to playing a very big role with this defense. How did that go over? All right. The Chandler Jones thing. Chandler Jones didn't get the money from the Cardinals, but J.J. Watt did. There might be guys in that locker room that feel for Chandler Jones. That I thought that might be tearing at the cohesiveness of this unit. Then, of course, the Malcolm Butler situation, which was very, very strange. Those three elements made me wonder about just how connected this group was going to be, and I was blown away at the swagger and the attitude that they took the field with in a very good way. And so that tells me that as football players and as professionals, they're playing for each other, that none of this stuff is between their ears, if you will, at least not in week one. And I think it's also a tribute to the fact that the Cardinals now, with the additions that have been made, now we'll see about A.J. Green, and I think this week is going to be a big week for A.J. Green because, as our guy Chuck Harris pointed out on Twitter, the number two cornerback on the Vikings got absolutely torched by the Bengals on Sunday, which would mean that if Patrick Peterson is now fronting DeAndre Hopkins, A.J. Green, if he's still all that, should be lined up for a big day. So to me, what I'm getting at is the amount of star players, if you will, or playmakers, as they're often called in the NFL, they've got enough of them that it's going to it creates its own momentum.
Yeah.
That games get in the right lane because impact players are making big plays.
Yes. Another thing to point out in the Vikings secondary, yes, Patrick Peterson was brought in, and it was a disappointing group last year, but they spent a first-round pick in 2020 on a cornerback in Jeff Gladney. They let him go in the preseason because he got indicted on a felony assault charge.
That's why I forgot about that.
The Cardinals are not the only team in this game that had some upheaval in their defensive secondary to a key member before the season started. Corey Peters continued to talk about the combination. We saw Chandler Jones go off in week one. J.J. Watt, we fully expected at some point from him as well. But here was Corey Peters and his thoughts on what that combination can do together this season.
I mean, I think it's really nightmares for offensive lines, you know, and then the schemes that we put together and draw up, I think they provide another challenge as well. But we've seen it throughout training camp. You know, those guys have been giving our offensive line fits. And it's good to see, you know, them carrying that over to the game and really, you know, having success in that area. And I expect it to continue. And as that, you know, grows and increases, I think it's going to provide opportunities for guys up and down the line. It's going to help the coverage. It really is just going to help the defense altogether.
Yeah, Corey Peters also talked about something we touched on earlier in this discussion, Bick, about, you know, it was not viewed as a strength, but he talked about the depth of this defense moving forward definitely being a strength.
The depth has been excellent. I think it's one of the strengths of our team at this point. Not only does it allow us to keep everybody fresh, I think it allows us to utilize players in positions where they can really excel. And where guys have weaknesses, we have other guys that can come in and take those reps. So so far everything has been really smooth. No egos in the room. Guys willing to sacrifice, take a step back. You know, maybe not play as much as they normally have, just so that we can all have a better team. So it's been really good so far. I look forward. You know, it's going to be a long season in a very tough division. At a certain point, everybody's number is going to get called. We're going to need everybody. So no matter what the role is right now, it could always increase. And so, you know, I'm excited about that. I think, you know, we're built to last, to have a longevity for the length of the season. And I expect us to be just as strong as we are now in week 17. So that's been great. And then as far as the rhythm and everything, you know, I feel really good to be back out there. It was great to be able to make some plays. Obviously, when you're able to make some plays early, you feel a lot better, a lot more confident. You know, things just flow a little bit better for you. And so that was great. And whenever we're dancing and having fun, the energy is great for the defense, and everybody's just flying around having a good time out there.
They certainly looked like they were having a good time.
Yeah, they did.
And Corey Peters was so close. It wouldn't have been his first touchdown, but he was like an inch away from having his first touchdown on defense since 2011 when he was with the Falcons.
And he's such a good dude, and he's so underrated for the rock-solid leadership he brings. I felt bad for him when that thing got overturned. Now, yeah, Chandler Jones made the play, and maybe Chandler Jones deserved to pick up that football, but Corey Peters is a great dude.
It almost looked to me like Chandler Jones got up so fast after that sack, and he was in position to recover that ball.
Uh-huh.
And I think he kind of looked around and said, I'm going to let Corey have this one.
I think
Chandler Jones probably could have beat Corey Peters to the football.
It would have been funny if he'd have like taken out Corey Peters too, and then take.
Yeah,
right.
So how much of a bummer was it?
Right.
How much of a bummer was it for Corey Peters not to get that touchdown?
Oh no, man. Honestly, just the experience for me on Sunday was just so much excitement about being able to be back out there. And just be playing again. So, you know, once the game started and I was out there playing, you know, that was good enough for me to have an opportunity to recover a fumble, help the team. You know, that's really icing on the cake. And now we're just looking to, you know, build on that.
I don't know why, but I'm one of those people when you go into a season, I always try to project who's going to score the first touchdown of the season. I mean, it really means nothing in the grand scheme of things,
yeah.
But it's probably been very rare in the history of the NFL that any team's first touchdown of a season is scored by a defensive lineman.
Yeah. I think
they were that close.
You probably saw the way I did. Somebody on Twitter was bemoaning when Corey Peters scored that he had DeAndre Hopkins in a bet scoring the first touchdown of the season. And sure enough, it circled back to it after that.
You never know with instant replay in the NFL. Text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, D-backs, they're wrapping up their series in Los Angeles against the Dodgers tonight. Our front office focus with assistant GM Amy Alsade is next at Spickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Diamondbacks front office focus.
At D-backs in L.A. wrapping up a series against the Dodgers, it is time for D-backs front office focus. We are joined by the assistant GM, senior VP of the Diamondbacks, Amiel Sade, here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Amiel, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll start with the obvious. It's been a tough year, obviously, and we're in the home stretch. 17 games left for the D-backs, and then it's a wrap on 2021. But from your viewpoint, what would you say the mindset of this team is in the dugout, on the field, among the players in the locker room?
Look, I think we're still trying to compete and win. I think they're. You know, as many people see, it's starting to kind of turn over into a younger team. Guys are competing for jobs for next year too. And I think you know, we're gonna have a pretty tough schedule with the Dodgers and Atlanta and the Giants. And I think just playing the role of spoiler gives you at least some little satisfaction in a really bad season. So, you know, they're still going out there and competing, trying to win the game, but also auditioning for some jobs for next year.
It's been a long, hard go for Diamondback fans over the last year and a half or so. Out of the young kids who have gotten playing time, Josh Rojas obviously stands out, but can you go through them and tell us how you think maybe they benefited from getting this kind of experience and maybe how they might be, you know, beacons of hope going forward?
Yeah, I've used the term on the show before, and I like to use the term transition tax. And I think all young players go through this, which is a period of time when they get in the big leagues and they struggle. And most of them, the good ones obviously rebound. And so we've started to see a little bit. So I think getting that out of the way is obviously healthy and good for them long term in their career. But we've seen Dalton Varsho struggle for the first half of this year and then turn it around in the second half and won't be one of the top players in the National League. We've seen, obviously, Pavin Smith play a long year playing multiple positions defensively. And really, he's had small ups and downs but shown a level of consistency. And then I think, on the pitching side, just being able to layer in a bunch of those young pitchers and giving them opportunities, the Gilberts, the Mejias, and Castellanoses, and we're going to see more of those. And so I do think it's going to be as bad as the season has gone, it's going to obviously help us long term by getting some of this out of the way.
Amy Alsade, D-backs assistant general manager and senior VP, our guest here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. We talked to Mike Hazen last week in this segment. He was very open and honest with us about his frustration, and he basically put the failure on himself in constructing a bullpen that could hold together for the course of the season. And he admitted, hey, a good bullpen wouldn't be the difference between where they are and challenging the Giants and Dodgers, who have had great seasons. But if you had to rank it, Amio, would you say that that's among the biggest frustrations of 2021 for the D-backs, is how that bullpen performed?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's probably one of our main priorities coming into the next year, is to just readdress the bullpen. Obviously, this bullpen now looks much different than the bullpen we broke camp with. Mm-hmm. And I think that, to some degree, that's sort of normal for a major league team, but probably not the way ours is constructed, because we don't have many familiar faces that were on this in this pen at the beginning of the year. And so, I think our record in one-run games is somewhere in like 8-27 or something like that. And so is it the difference between being in last place or second to last place? Probably not, but it is the difference in if your bullpen can hold games. For the most part, I do think it's a difference in maybe it's 5-10 wins, and that gets you a little bit closer to where, away from being the worst team. So, yeah, it's been a frustrating year, and the bullpen is definitely part of it. There are other areas that we need to address, but that's definitely the one of the main priorities.
How would you assess Zach Gallen's season in terms of how it projects towards the future of being maybe the ace of the staff moving forward?
Yeah, I think Zach will be the first one to tell you this isn't the season that he anticipated. I think, obviously the injuries this year broke his season up a little bit, but both to start the year and then obviously in the middle of the year. We still believe in Zach. We see Zach as a frontline starter. He's gone through some ups and downs. I think he's it's been challenging to kind of get out of, when you come back and trying to get your delivery back and get your stuff back at the major league level. It has been somewhat challenging. So it's been somewhat of a truncated year for him. I think he looks at it as looking back on this year and how he can grow from it. But we do believe that he's going to be, he's a frontline guy for us moving forward.
Amy Alsade, our guest here on D-backs Front Office Focus on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Last night, we've been waiting to see Seth Beer. He comes up to the majors finally. He makes an impact early on, goes out early with the injury last night. I mean, how bummed are you and the organization for Seth Beer right now?
Yeah, I think it's obviously a little disappointing. We're going to hope for the best here. I think, as Torrey pointed out on the on this post-game last night, it's a dislocated left shoulder. We'll reevaluate him today. I think, I guess on the bright side, he's done this before. So he has like a small history of it wouldn't call it a subluxation, but a small dislocation. So, crossing our fingers that the soreness wears off today, and we'll see where he is. But I guess the good thing is his X-rays were negative, and right now we're just hoping that he comes in and we can see a little bit more of him, because I think we want to see more of him. I'm sure D-backs fans want to see more of him.
What was the net impact for an organization that obviously is going to lean on its farm system in the coming years? What was the impact of having that whole infrastructure shut down during a pandemic and possibly losing a year of development for a whole subset of players?
Yeah, I mean, the impact, obviously, not just for us, but across baseball, I mean, the impact was monumental. I mean, it was, especially for players that didn't get an opportunity to get a number of at-bats. And, you know, I think I point to somebody like Jake McCarthy, because it's really impressive to see what Jake McCarthy did, because he wasn't at our alt site last year. He remade his swing and obviously made it to the big leagues by having a great season in the minor leagues. But he's probably somewhat of an anomaly, because most of the players that didn't get at-bats last year were kind of churning uphill. We saw it a lot early in the, especially with hitters, we saw it a lot early in the season in our farm system. Now, a bunch of them have kind of normalized, but, it's been challenging. Both, I think we saw some mental health component to it, and also the physical component to it. So I think, we're getting past that point now. And so players are starting to get a little tired, as you can see, just from not playing last year. But we hope that 2022 will be a little bit better.
Well, Amiel, thanks for the time this morning. Appreciate the discussion.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Amiel Sade, D-backs assistant general manager, senior VP, joined us on the D-backs front office focus here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Coming up next, 9 o'clock. You know what that means. Time for some social studies with Sarah Cazell. Woo-hoo. It is Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.